This is Beyond the Headlines. I'm KUNR General Manager David Stipik. On the phone with me today is Naomi Klein, international best-selling author, award-winning journalist, and syndicated columnist, who is the featured speaker at the February 11th Forum for Excellence Lecture Series presented by the College of Liberal Arts. Her books include The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism, and This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate. Thank you for the interview today, Ms. Klein.
Good to speak with you, David.
As we get started, your writings connect the dots between climate change and capitalism. What will be the focal points of your lecture next week?
Well, I'm going to be laying out an argument about why it is that though our governments have been talking about doing something with regards to climate change for 2.5 decades now, we've been having UN meetings about it, yet emissions continue to rise. I'm going to be arguing that the reason why we have failed so miserably to do something meaningful to bring down emissions is because the things that we would need to do conflict directly with the kind of extreme worldview that has dominated in this period, and that is the worldview that Joseph Stiglitz, the Nobel Prize-winning economist, calls market fundamentalism, this idea that there's no role for government, that anything collective is suspect. That's a big problem when it comes to climate change because it's the essence of a collective problem, and you do need aggressive regulation of polluters, and all of these things very much fell out of fashion in the very years that we were trying to cope with this crisis.
Now, America's DNA is all about free market practices and capitalism.
Tell Bernie Sanders that.
Right. Well, that's the tradition, and America seems to have that DNA. Some may be surprised to hear what you're seeing as the causal relationship between capitalism and climate change, as well as natural disasters around the world, and especially you cite Hurricane Katrina. Explain some of that.
Well, for me, my wake-up call really came when I was in New Orleans in the midst of the disaster following the breaking of the levees after Katrina hit. I was there actually working on my last book on the Shock Doctrine. And I have to say, you know, I don't come from the world of environmentalism. My previous writing has all been focused on economics and human rights. But when I was in New Orleans during Katrina, I realized that we had this powerful intersection of crises. Because of that market fundamentalist ideology, we've seen a complete erosion of the state, of the public sphere. You know, you think about those images of people in the city abandoned on their rooftops or abandoned in the Superdome, and it seems like FEMA can't find New Orleans for 5 days. I mean, people left without food and water, just a complete breakdown of what one would expect a government to be able to do in the midst of a disaster. And we're going to see more and more of that. I mean, we know that our public infrastructure, roads, bridges, levees, have all been allowed to erode in the midst of this constant cutting back. And then we are seeing more and more heavy weather, more and more disasters like Katrina. So, you know, I felt when I was in New Orleans that I was seeing a glimpse of the future. A weak public sphere collides with heavy weather linked to climate change, and that we really need to veer. We have to get off this road, but in order to get off this road, we need a shift in worldview. We have to remember that it is possible for people to do good things when they come together. There is a history of that in the United States, certainly the whole history of the New Deal.
Were there other factors that brought this focus to your work over the years?
Well, for the Shock Doctrine, I did a fair bit of research about how in the wake of natural disasters, some linked to climate change, some not linked to climate change, we were seeing examples of what I describe as the Shock Doctrine. When people are disoriented, when they're dealing with the daily crisis created by that disaster, they aren't able to protect themselves as well. So, you know, in New Orleans, the public housing, you know, famously was demolished when residents hadn't returned. They weren't able to protect their homes. The school system was privatized. And I had seen this in the aftermath of other disasters, like the Asian tsunami in 2004. I had reported on that and seen how when people were displaced, farmers, fishing people from their coastal properties, often governments and corporations used that as an opportunity to take very valuable land and give it to developers. So I guess that's what brought me to this topic, kind of seeing a dystopian version of how we might respond to a future of more and more shocks. But This Changes Everything, my most recent book, is much more optimistic. It's making the argument that a great many people actually know that this system is failing them on many different fronts, because they are dealing with the impacts of that crumbling public sphere. In the school system, in the healthcare system, they're dealing with it with widening inequality, and there is a deep desire for change. And I, jokingly mentioned Bernie Sanders, but I think it's pretty significant that a self-described democratic socialist is making a viable run to lead the Democratic Party. Who would have imagined that? And I think that speaks to the desire that, with or without climate change, people see the need for a deep change to our economic system. But climate change ups the ante, because it says, okay, this same system that puts profit before all else, that makes the pursuit of growth the overriding function of the economy, is also destabilizing life on Earth.
This is Beyond the Headlines. I'm KUNR General Manager David Stipik. I'm on the phone today with Naomi Klein, international best-selling author, award-winning journalist, and syndicated columnist. Naomi will be the Forum for Excellence speaker next February 11th. That's next Thursday. College of Liberal Arts is putting this on, and it's here on campus. Information at our website, KUNR.org. Ms. Klein, what were some of the elements, as you researched and saw these things, that really alarmed you the most out of all these things? You talked about some fairly alarming scenarios just now, but were there things that just really jumped out as you researched this further?
I'm pretty hard to shock. I've reported in disaster zones pretty consistently for the past couple decades. But, I was shocked, for instance, when I found out that so many prison inmates were being used to fight firefighters. And, of course, this is linked to climate change. In California, the drought has gone on for 5 years. Wildfires have been out of control. The state needs more and more firefighters, and 4,000 of California's firefighters are prison inmates. Mm-hmm. And this is the case because it saves the state of California about $1 billion a year. I mean, they are able to pay people to do some of the most dangerous work in our economy, fighting fires, $1 an hour. So this is why, I think climate change shows us that if we continue to have this mindset that we can just keep cutting back and cutting back, then, we're looking at a pretty dystopic future. I've also seen some optimistic stuff, like, what's happening in Germany right now, where, in a country with a lot less sun than Nevada, they're getting 30% of their electricity from decentralized renewables. They've created 400,000 jobs. Much of the renewable energy that's being generated is owned by local communities, so they're able to use the money from their feed-in tariff program, which is similar to what you had in Nevada with net metering. I know it's very controversial what's been going on there, but in Germany they're bringing down their emissions, and getting off coal, getting off nuclear power, which is very controversial in Germany, and they're also creating huge numbers of jobs, and they're generating revenue for local services.
And so that is in your message here, because we are these days full of books and movies that are very apocalyptic and dark and gloom and doom. There is a hopeful aspect of what you bring to your talk and through your books in terms of the action to be taken?
Absolutely. This is, it's really not a doom and gloom book. I lay out at the beginning why there is such urgency. And the reason I call the book and the talk This Changes Everything is because everything is going to change one way or another. Because if we stay on the road we're on, we're facing a radically changed physical world. But it isn't too late to change our political and economic system, which frankly isn't working for people anyway, and prevent that outcome. But, one way or another, things are going to change. And we have the power to make those changes be something that benefit a great number of people. One example in the book is, clearly, if we're going to take climate change seriously, we have to deal with this corrosive problem of the power of money in politics. To plug somebody else's book, I've been reading Jane Mayer's Dark Money about the Koch brothers. And, it's a chilling book by one of, your country's best investigative reporters. But it's, it's so striking that this is untenable. And frankly, we will not move forward as quickly as we need to move forward on climate change unless companies that earn their money from fossil fuels, like Koch Industries, are not able to pour as much money as they are into the political system. And I think that's good news, because, people know that this system is broken, and I think you see that, you see much evidence of that during the presidential debates.
This is Beyond the Headlines on KUNR. I'm David Stipik, visiting on the phone today from Toronto with journalist and author Naomi Klein. She'll be the featured speaker at the College of Liberal Arts Forum for Excellence Lecture Series next Thursday evening, February 11th, here on the university campus. Ms. Klein, in your view, capitalism is a big part of the climate change problem. Are there areas where you also see it as part of the solution?
I've actually been part of this process of kind of laying out what the policies would be that could lower our emissions in line with what scientists are telling us, in line with what engineers are telling us we can now do. There's research out of Stanford that says we now have the technology, much of it coming from private industry, existing technologies that could bring us to 100% renewables for electricity in 2 decades. Now there's research out from NOAA supporting those findings. It's really, you know, an amazing time. So definitely there is a role for industry, but it has to be huge public investments that support that. And we have to have the right incentives in place in order to make that happen. But you know, I do make the argument that we have a conflict between the way our capitalist economy values the pursuit of growth at all costs, a growth that is fueled by consumption and speculation and bringing down emissions quickly enough. And that is a really important conflict that we need to reckon with. Now, as we transition, as we invest in the low-carbon economy, as we invest in public transit, as we invest in renewable energy, those sectors are going to grow. So it's not that nothing can grow, but there does need to be a strategy for contracting as well.
So it's also about the blending or balancing of private and public sectors.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have a mixed economy. There, you know, in the States you do, in Canada we do, but it really is about changing that mix. Right now, over the past 40 years, private corporations and publicly listed corporations have gotten a larger and larger share of that mix. And so I think that is what is out of balance at the moment.
Now, you focused on capitalism, which is the American way, or the DNA that I talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. Can the United States make some changes in itself? It's such a global problem, and we're trying to partner with other countries and other continents. What can the United States do on its own, in your view?
Nobody's asking the United States to do this on its own. And I was in Paris at the end of December when there was a huge summit of world leaders that came together to come up with an agreement to keep temperatures below 2 degrees or 1.5 degrees Celsius warming. But at the same time, when you added up all the pledges that governments were bringing to the negotiations, it led to almost double that level of warming. But we already have an agreement that says what we need to do. What we don't have are plans at the national level to do it. And I think where the United States plays a really critical role is, you know, for a long time, the U.S. was the world's largest emitter. It's been surpassed by China, but if you look at it historically, the U.S. is the largest historical emitter. It's been emitting at very high levels for a very long time, and China's just catching up. And I think because of that role in creating the problem, when people see real leadership from the United States, it encourages more ambition from other countries. And the flip side of that is when the U.S. Really lags, as it certainly did during the Bush years, then that kind of gives a license to other countries like China and India to say, hey, it's our turn and the U.S. isn't even doing it, so why should we? So, you know, what you really see at the, you know, in the international negotiations is that ambition, particularly when it's coming from very large economies like the U.S. and China, is contagious. I mean, then everybody starts to ante up. But the flip side of that being when the big economies, you know, say, well, we're not going to lead, then it gives everybody else permission to just do nothing.
Now, whether our listeners are able to attend next week's lecture when you're here in Reno or just listening to us today on the radio, what are a couple of key things you'd like them to take away from your message?
So I think one thing that people can do in Nevada is, defend your solar industry, which is very much under siege right now. And there's a big and important battle going on that is being watched across the country and indeed around the world, because we think of you as such a sunny state and can't quite believe that the solar industry is being undercut the way it is. Get involved in that. And, you know, my big message is, you know, of course it matters what we do as individuals. There's all kinds of things we can do to lower our personal carbon footprint. We can eat less meat. We can fly less. You know, we can bike more. We can use transit. But, you know, as important as those individual things are, it's absolutely critical what we do together. So, you know, get involved in groups like 350.org, where I'm a board member. If you go to my website, This Changes Everything. You know, we're linked up with a whole bunch of other groups. So it matters what we do as individuals, but even more than that, it matters what we do, you know, in the places where we have more collective power, like the university. I mean, the fossil fuel divestment movement has spread across the United States and around the world. Thanks to the incredible work of Bill McKibben and others at 350.org. And, you know, that's something that students can get involved in.
And for those who aren't familiar with 350.org, what is that?
Well, 350.org is an environmental group that formed specifically to deal with climate change. There's lots of green groups out there. 350 is the only one that is specifically focused on climate change. And on doing everything we can to get to 100% renewables as quickly as science demands and as engineering allows. And that means taking on the political and corporate obstacles in the way.
Are you excited to be joining us in Reno next week?
I'm really looking forward to being there. And it's exciting to be there, you know, a little bit more than a week before the primaries. And I'm looking forward to doing some research, too, while I'm there.
Naomi Klein, we look forward to hearing more about all these topics that you've had just a few minutes to talk with us about today. But thanks for your time today and look forward to your visit to Reno and our beautiful campus here.
Thanks so much for the great conversation.
And that's Naomi Klein, journalist and best-selling author of several books, including This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate. That will be her topic as she is the featured lecturer at the College of Liberal Arts Forum for Excellence next Thursday, February 11th, 7 p.m. here at Nightingale Hall on the University of Nevada, Reno campus. The lecture is free and open to the public, and you can find out more information at our website, KUNR.org. I'm General Manager David Stipik, and this is Beyond the Headlines on KUNR.